Hello and welcome to The Big Fight. For a long time, people have been asking what exactly is the government's big strategy when it comes to Kashmir, when it comes to Pakistan. Accusations sometimes of a flip-flop back and forth, especially when it comes to Pakistan. But now it seems that there's a very clear new contour that seems to be emerging. This week we did see Rajnath Singh going back to the valley, second time he's going, clearly sounding conciliatory, talking about the fact that pellet guns need to be removed and alternatives are going to be found, sounding actually far more conciliatory than Mehbooba Mufti was actually sitting right next to him. So a softer approach in Kashmir and also a much tougher approach with Pakistan and the using of the Baluchistan, talking about it, referring to Baluchistan, Gilgit and Pakistan-occupied Kashmir in the Independence Day speech. So is this going to be the strategy now? Let's be soft internally, especially within Kashmir. It's an internal issue, has to be settled and handled with sensitivity and with worrying about the local people, and yet take a really tough line with Pakistan. And perhaps this is going to happen all the way through to the UN General Assembly and further beyond. So I've got all the best experts I could think of to help us understand this particular strategy who are joining us on the program. Let me start off by welcoming from Kashmir, we do have with us Shujaat Bukhari and also Engineer Rashid, who's an independent MLA from Jammu and Kashmir, perhaps one of the first MLAs in Kashmir to be openly, seems to be espousing a separatist sort of a line. We have with us Air Vice Marshal Shahzad Chaudhry joining us from Pakistan. Joining us from London, Hamal Haider, who's the spokesperson of the Baloch National Movement. So it's great to have you joining us on the program. Muzaffar Beg, one of the top leaders from Jammu and Kashmir. It's always a privilege to talk to you, sir. Senior leader from there, former deputy chief minister, of course, of Jammu and Kashmir. Muzaffar Beg is with us as well, and we're going to be talking to you in a couple of minutes. And here in the Delhi studio, we do have with us Ajoy Kumar, representing the Congress Party, G.V.L. Narasimha Rao, the spokesperson of the BJP. Sir Kamal Sibal, former foreign secretary who's dealt with India's foreign policy in great detail. Praveen Swamy, national editor, strategic and international affairs at the Indian Express. Also with us, Jyoti Malhotra, senior journalist. Thank you all so much for joining us. Can I just start perhaps with you, Muzaffar Beg Saab, and just ask you what you make of what seems to be the strategy that is unfolding now in Kashmir? Is it a specific strategy that you think is now being taken? There has to be a healing touch. You have to directly engage with people in the valley and listen to whatever the grievances are.
The latest development is a welcome step. For quite some time, frankly speaking, we did not have any policy vis-a-vis Kashmir. The last policy initiative was to appoint interlocutors. Unfortunately, their report, which was prepared after 18 months of hard work and groundwork, nobody even looked at it. So it took the unfortunate incident, which the Kashmir Valley and other areas witnessing today, to awaken us to the urgent need, the categorical necessity of formulating a policy, not only towards Pakistan, but also towards the people of Jammu and Kashmir. I think that the two visits of the Home Minister, particularly yesterday's visit, in which he was very soft, very suave, though he's a very, very strong man, a man of depth, I think that he did, his body language, his language was quite placatory. He's keeping the doors open. However, there were no takers from the secessionist or de-accessionist group, and there will be no takers till two things happen. First, Pakistan gets a cold shoulder from the United Nations. Till then, Hurriyat Conference will not be forthcoming. They will not undercut Pakistan's position in the international community. Pakistan is externalizing, right, internationalizing the issue. Hurriyat Conference would not like to go against that. Secondly, unless we do some groundwork, some behind-the-scene rapprochement with the secessionists, they will not be forthcoming.
By the way, that may be one of the reasons why India is talking about Baluchistan right now. Pakistan really tries to create too much of a shindig at the United Nations.
There is another reason. Very few people know this was supposed to be confidential. In the all parties meeting, the foreign minister apprised the members present there that there had been some sort of communication received from the United Nations on the complaint of Pakistan to send a human rights investigation team in Kashmir. When that information was given to the members, starting from Congress, everybody opposed that. And it was the collective response was that Pakistan should mend its own house. They have no locust and eye to invest, to ask United Nations to look into our affairs. They must look at what is happening in Balochistan. So this Balochistan came up in response to the information that Government of India had received and shared with us that they are asking for a UN commission to investigate human rights violations in Kashmir. I think that was the reason why Prime Minister had to take up this issue on 15th of August.
Hamal Haider, just want to talk to you first. You know, as the fact that Balochistan is being spoken about right now, is that from the point of view of the Baloch cause a good thing or a bad thing? I've heard both. A lot of leaders of the Baloch movement have welcomed it. Many of them are in exile. Does it increase whatever is happening? I mean, you and others have been charging, talking about Pakistani repression inside Balochistan. Will that be increased because of the statements that all of you are making? We saw pictures on Independence Day just a few days back from inside Balochistan, people waving Indian flags out there. What sort of a reaction is that going to have from the Pakistani state?
I mean, just let me tell you that the situation is already worse there. It's more than worse. And people are being abducted on a daily basis. And the Home Minister of Balochistan, a week ago, acknowledged that they're abducted, arrested, in his words, 13,000 people. So it clearly shows that the situation is already worse there. And the statement Prime Minister Modi issued in support of Balochistan, I don't think will make a situation in Balochistan any worse. So, I mean, the people, as you mentioned, the people have welcomed Prime Minister Modi's statement, and people are very excited. And, you know, this is the first time that a government, a country has expressed support to our movement, and we are really grateful to Prime Minister Modi. It's support for our people, and we wish he will do more for us in the future.
Hamal Haider, inside Balochistan, I mean, okay, the population of Balochistan for a province that large is not very high. There's a very strong Pakistani presence there. What eventually are your hopes and aspirations? What do you think can happen in Balochistan?
There's been a war since Pakistan acquired Balochistan in 1948, and people are not happy with Pakistani government. So, I mean, unless Balochistan is freed, the political situation will not be okay there. So the tension between Baloch nationalists and between the Pakistani establishment will always be there unless the issue is resolved. And, you know, we have been ignored and our issue has not been not getting any coverage in international media and mainstream Pakistani media. And even international journalists are not allowed to go there. So that's the basic reason people don't know about Balochistan in the world. But the situation is worse, and it will be worse in the future as well.
All right. Air Vice Marshal Shehzad Chaudhry, is this something that has taken Pakistan a bit by surprise and a bouncer that sort of got you weaving a little bit? Because Pakistan repeatedly talks about Kashmir and what's been happening out there. And I think what Prime Minister Modi has done is to say, look, you are to some extent living in a glass house yourself, so perhaps you've got to be a little careful of how many stones are being thrown. You've just had a statement, by the way, in Sindh from Altaf Hussain. He's okay, he's apologized later, but you had one of the prominent leaders of a political party like the MQM saying that Pakistan is a cancer on the world. You know, it's a rather strong statement to make from a prominent Pakistani political party. He apologized, but the fact that he said it means that there are internal issues for Pakistan to grapple with.
One, he's not a Pakistani politician. He's a politician who used to be a Pakistani, but now is a British citizen. So obviously you can't refer to him as a Pakistani citizen or a Pakistani political leader. That is one. Secondly, so that should take care of Altaf Hussain once for all in terms of his actual status. In terms of Balochistan is, you said Pakistanis are living there. Well, it is part of Pakistan, not since the last 20 years or 30 years since Pakistan came into being. So I really am surprised that you make a statement while addressing a question to the other participant, which
actually,
is
obviously... Actually, that then would be a statement of fact. I mean, if you're saying it's part of Pakistan, then there are Pakistanis living there. What's wrong with saying that?
No, no, you said you were asking the Baloch participant that but along with the Balochis, there are Pakistanis living there. I don't know what do you mean by
okay.
that, but
Fine.
I think
so
that's a very, very wrong way of putting something.
People from elsewhere,
now, yeah.
all living inside Balochistan.
No, no, no.
Their numbers are...
There are over 6 million Balochis, and Balochis have run that province. Balochis have been are part of Pakistan. They are Pakistan. So Balochistan is Pakistan. So there is obviously no question on that. Thirdly, on the glass house, I think aren't all of us in the same situation? We all live in glass houses. Now your 200 plus districts of your own country are under some sort of a insurgency, and so therefore I don't think any one of us can refer to the other. But I think there's a very clear difference
can I just,
that you must
can I just,
make.
Hang on,
that you must
can
make.
I just can no, I just discuss
no, no,
that
let
glass
me,
house
let me complete. Let me complete. Let
the
me
number
complete
of parts
statement.
Of India that are actually completely stable. If you were to really start, I'm not saying India should ever compare itself with Pakistan, nor should it try to equate itself with Pakistan for a number of reasons I'm not going to go into right now. But actually, 90 to 95% of India is perfectly stable and is likely to be perfectly stable. There are small pockets where there are problems.
Well, I don't know what's
quite unlike Pakistan.
I don't know what's
theoretically,
happening
theoretically,
in
you've got
Nepal,
a problem in Gilgit,
Nepal,
you've got a
India,
problem in
Jharkhand.
Balochistan, you've got a problem in the Northwest Frontier Province.
Vikram, your program is not meant to be of this kind. I think let's
you
get
feel
into
at home.
Logical,
you should
logical
feel at
discussion.
Home.
Okay. Yeah,
You're
yeah.
Often
the
on
point
that
here is the point here is. You cannot equate Kashmir with Balochistan. Kashmir is an international issue between two states, bona fide states, Pakistan and India, recognized by the United Nations as a disputed territory and still outstanding for resolution. So that is as far as Kashmir is concerned. So when Pakistan raises a voice on Kashmir or the status of human rights there, or for that matter, the resolution of that particular territory, then obviously it is talking under the larger realm of the United Nations.
Is that
resolutions and the United Nations Charter?
Kamal Sibal, you want to respond to that?
Let me complete my sentence. When you talk of Balochistan, you are actually interfering in the matters of the state of another, which is against the Charter of the United Nations.
But hang on, how is India interfering? India is saying that you've got to worry about the human rights of people in Balochistan. India's entitled to say that. India could say, India can say we are worried about the human rights of people kidnapped by Boko Haram. It doesn't mean that India is invading Nigeria or doing something out there. If India says that there's a human rights problem, look at the pictures, Mr. Shehzad Chaudhry, that you see every day coming out. People being picked up, people being tortured, mutilated bodies being thrown on the street. If there's a human rights problem, then you're entitled to say it's a human rights problem.
Come on, Vikram. You're far bigger than this.
Then what?
You got to listen to your guest. Otherwise, if you want to talk, then I can just sit here and
you
I don't
spoke.
Know.
I'm just asking you a question. I'm waiting for you to answer to that.
Balochistan, in terms of the Article 2, subpara 4 of the UN Charter, you cannot, even if a civil war goes on in another country, you're not meant to interfere, intervene. And our biggest problem today in Balochistan is not the BLA or the BRA. The people that you get represented on this program, our biggest problem is the terrorism that is taking place either because of sectarian grounds or for that matter being sponsored from Afghanistan. That is our bigger problem today, and that is what we are fighting against. The Baloch liberation
when you,
was a problem.
When you train
and
there
are gaps,
rare
there are, there
and
are gaps
feed wild in, animals, they will
there
come
are
back
gaps
and
in what
you.
We need to do.
Simple lesson,
there are gaps
don't
in what
encourage
we need to do
terrorists.
In political gaps in
if you
in
spend decades building
no,
up terrorism,
that.
Sometime it is going to come back
that.
And hurt you. It's a lesson you should have learned by now. By the way, all countries should learn it. I'm not saying that India should encourage terrorism for the same reason. Never encourage a terrorist. Never train a terrorist. Because a terrorist will someday come back and attack you. And that's part of what Pakistan
sure enough,
is seeing.
Sure enough, I can tell you that. I mean, that's what India needs to remember when you're talking about your 4 regular consulates and 11 sub-offices around the eastern, southeastern Afghanistan.
All right. This is not supposed to be an argument between you and me, sir. Mr. Kamal Sibal, you want to just respond to what he said, then I do want to get back to Kashmir.
But I want to ask him, when they interfered in the crisis in Punjab, when there was the Khalistan movement, were they interfering in internal affairs or not? When on Babri Masjid they went to town, I was foreign secretary then, the Gujarat riots, President Musharraf went to town in the UN General Assembly. Was that not interference in internal affairs? Likewise,
we've never spoken about the way that you...
Of course he did. I was there myself. So when on the Babri Masjid they went to town and launched an international campaign, wasn't it interference in internal affairs? When they commit terrorist acts, assuming for a moment that in Kashmir they have a right to commit terrorism, but when they commit terrorist acts all over India, in Bombay, in Delhi, in Varanasi, in Jaipur, in Bangalore, wasn't that interference in our internal affairs? So this kind of an argument, self-serving argument, that simply because Prime Minister Modi has spoken about human rights situation.
Okay.
Now, when let's say President Obama says something about so-called intolerance in India, this can be seen as an internal, as an interference in internal affairs.
Okay.
So, and in fact, human rights issues have become such that countries are pronouncing on human rights violations in so many countries. It's now not accepted that it is purely an internal affair. Therefore,
okay,
for Pakistan to argue that Prime Minister Modi cannot speak about human rights violations in Balochistan, to my mind, has no legs to stand upon. It's a totally wrong argument. Finally, one point about these UN resolutions and this and that. Since 1957, there has been no UN resolution. The UN has totally disinterested itself in the whole issue. In the 1972 bilateral Shimla agreement, Pakistan agreed that this issue will be solved bilaterally.
Okay.
But Pakistan has constantly violated all understandings it has reached with India.
Okay.
And
I just
and
I just
the
want
default
to come
position,
back.
Since they have no answer to anything, they speak, start
can
speaking
I,
about
okay,
UN.
Okay, I want to come back to
come
Kashmir.
Back?
Sajjad Bukhari, Engineer Rashid are still there. Muzaffar Beg is there. I want to come back to it, but I'm about to lose the signal to my guests from Pakistan and also from London. So let me just finish with that, and then I'll come back to this. Amal Haider, you heard what Air Vice Marshal Shehzad Chaudhry was saying, that India has no right to say anything in Balochistan, and at the end of the day, the only problem that there is there is one of terrorism, which is being fanned from across the border. How would you like to respond to that?
Mr. Chaudhry said Baluchi are part of our country. Baluchi love to be Pakistani. Actually, this is not Baluchi. He doesn't know how to call us. We are called Baluch. Baluchi is our language. For the 68 years, even the Pakistani rulers haven't learned how to call us. So this is basically a problem of mentality. And we have never been part of Pakistan. And if you talk about historical facts, so in 1948, Pakistan forcefully annexed Balochistan and forcefully invaded Balochistan with army forces. Similarly, they invaded the Pakistani occupied Kashmir. And in 1957, the United Nations asked Pakistan to pull out its army, and Pakistan never respected that UN mandate. So these are historical facts. On the other hand, Balochistan, I know there is no media coverage and there is no talk about Balochistan, but you cannot change the facts. And facts are facts. So Balochistan has never been part of Pakistan. And people there, a majority of the people there, don't want to be part of Pakistan. And you saw that all major political parties welcome Prime Minister Modi's statement of support.
Okay.
And actually, that clearly shows that Baloch people don't want to be part of Pakistan, and it is our right. And secondly, we said we are terrorists or something like that. So we are political people. My party's chairman, Ghulam Ahmad Baloch, was abducted and brutally killed after 3 days of abduction. So he was a politician. He was sitting in his lawyer's office. So,
okay.
I mean, the terrorist is Pakistani army and Pakistani intelligence agencies, as I mentioned before. More than 13,000 people were arrested, and they acknowledge it. Now, I want to ask Mr. Chaudhry, where are they? Why they are not represented before the court? Because they have been shifted to torture cells, and they acknowledge this. They have been torture cells, and they will be killed one by one. We know that. And every day we see two or three political activists' bodies are thrown in the place in Balochistan.
Okay.
So this is the situation.
All right, Amal Haider, thank you so much for joining us. Air Vice Marshal Shehzad Chaudhry, I know I'm about to lose the signal to you, sir. Any final comments you have, including, you know, one of the simplest and the best ways of establishing exactly whatever is happening in Balochistan is to just allow foreign journalists in, allow foreign press in. And by the way, Pakistan's asking for human rights groups or the United Nations to send human rights groups to Kashmir. Perhaps you could allow them inside Balochistan. What's wrong with that?
Absolutely. There is no restriction whatsoever. If you want to come in, please let us know. We'll have that arranged there for you.
Is that a promise?
But let me just
say, is that a promise?
I'm going
to hold you to that.
Let, yeah, Let me know. Let me know when you want
because
to do
so
that.
So far, we haven't got secondly, one. No visa to go to Balochistan.
You know the fringe that you actually carry on these television chat shows, these 30-odd people who are living on Indian largesse and Indian passports, is not someone who represents the Baloch. There's
he
a Baloch assembly.
He doesn't have an Indian passport.
There's a Balochistan. There's a Balochistan Provincial Assembly. There are Baloch representatives in the Senate of Pakistan. Equal number for all other provinces. So I really don't know who are the people that you bring along with Indian passports or not living on Indian largesse.
We have represent an elected assembly in Kashmir
yes.
where 75% so of the people of Jammu and Kashmir have voted.
Quickly,
the whole
quickly,
world
quickly
has
on Kashmir. Quickly on Kashmir.
I think
quickly
you can't
Kashmir,
compare yourself Kashmir, with Kashmir. Not. Jammu and Kashmir is a democratically elected government and you have been shamelessly
Let me talk about Kashmir. The UNSC resolutions is not rescinded. It is very much alive. It is still around.
We have constantly
yes. And
violated.
That is why Mr.
But
Ban Ki-moon,
why don't you
Mr.
Pakistan
Ban Ki-moon
occupied Kashmir
about,
and then we'll start discussing the UN resolution. The UN resolution first
I
part
think,
is you're going to vacate Pakistan occupied Kashmir,
think,
Gilgal, Baltistan. Why don't you
I
do that and then we'll discuss
I think,
it?
I think we need to do that. I think we need to get together to talk about Kashmir. That is why Pakistan proposed to India just about a couple of weeks back. Let's get together, talk about Kashmir.
I think
we need to follow up on that.
You see Pakistani guests on Indian television clearly on the defensive. They have all along, the last several months, we have seen them really speaking on television and throwing all kinds of muck. But today, they have put in their place. They know how to hide. They don't know how to hide their own human rights violations in their own states, how they are fighting local uprising by bombing areas in Balochistan, by sending their fighter planes there, by killing people in their own country.
No, you're absolutely wrong. Nothing like that is happening in Balochistan. You're entirely wrong, sir. You're entirely wrong.
Okay.
You're misrepresenting the facts. Nothing like this.
We don't expect you to speak the truth.
Can I? All right. I'm going to declare a truce on this particular television show in any case. Ebaiz Marshal, Shehzad Chaudhry, always good to hear from you. And I'm going to call you up later and I'm going to take you up on the discussions on that journalistic delegation to Balochistan.
Please go ahead and let me know. We'll follow that up for you.
We'll certainly talk about it. I would love to come. All right, thank you so much, Air Vice Marshal Shehzad Chaudhry, for joining us. Shujat, you heard what Muzaffar Beg started the program by saying. This is the right strategy, is what he said. You've got to. Pakistan has been put a bit on the defensive by raising Balochistan, and it's going to keep them on the defensive in the United Nations General Assembly. And yes, conciliation taking place in Kashmir. Is that the way it's been seen in the valley, Rajnath Singh's visit, or not quite?
See, Vikram, there are two things. I think that when Prime Minister Narendra Modi spoke at August 15 from the ramparts of Red Fort, he actually talked about Balochistan and he talked about the other side of the Kashmir and human rights violations there. I think at that time also Kashmir was burning and it's burning even today. So when Narendra Modi was speaking from Red Fort, he should have talked about Kashmir, which was burning, which was under siege for so long. But I think that the difference of distance between Kashmir and Balochistan is just 17 kilometers. Kashmir is 1,000 kilometers from Delhi and Balochistan is 1,117 kilometers, something 100 kilometers or so. So I think on that day, Kashmir seemed to be at far distance as far as Delhi is concerned. Because he didn't speak about Kashmir, he didn't reach out to Kashmir. He only spoke about Kashmir when a delegation of the joint opposition from Jammu and Kashmir met him, knocked at his door, and he made a statement. I don't want that Kashmir should be made hostage to another issue like Balochistan, and the resolution of Jammu and Kashmir dispute is not actually, there is no process for that.
Okay.
So.
As far as
Home Minister Rajnath Singh's visit is concerned, certainly yes. Yesterday, there was a change in his tone and approach, as you said at the beginning, that he was reconciliatory. He did talk about opening for talks with all. He said that pellet guns would be replaced in next 4 days or so. Decision would be taken. He made an appeal to the people of Jammu and Kashmir that they should help in restoring calm. But the larger problem, which has been existing for a long time, is that there is huge trust deficit vis-a-vis New Delhi as far as Srinagar is concerned. mean, when he has spoken about talking to the people, I mean, there is no specification as to whom he is going to talk. What would be the mechanism? Is it going to have the same fate
and obviously it's as a dynamic situation. Shujat, let me just get Engineer Rashid in on also, and then Muzaffar Beg to maybe take up some of the points. Rashid Saab, you know, you're one of the people who is there in the assembly. You are an elected member of the assembly, yet you sometimes seem to be taking outright separatist positions as well. What is your sense of the latest approach that the government of India is now taking with Kashmir? Do you think there is going to be a healing touch? Sir, or do you think the violence and the trouble is going to continue?
First, I take a strong exception of the point that we are separatists. We are not separatists. We are realistic people. And what you have said, let me give me a minute. When Prime Minister of India spoke from the airport, he said that people of POK or PAK, whatever you may call it, they want to be part of India. Good. If Prime Minister says that, I am sure that he must be having some intelligence inputs and he will never lie. Another thing is that Jatinder Singh, who is minister in Prime Minister's office, he said in Jammu that we want to hoist a tricolour in Muzaffarabad and in Mirpur. Third thing, you have a parliamentary resolution that whole of the J&K belongs to India. Fourth thing, there are 24 seats lying vacant in Jammu and Kashmir Assembly. How can you fulfill all your own promises? Leave us apart. So the only civilized way, the democratic way, is to hold a plebiscite. If we believe that 80% people have voted, people of POK are angry with Pakistan, people of Gilgit-Baltistan want Azadi from Pakistan, Jammu people are already with you, there are 87 elected MLAs who have taken oath under Indian Constitution. So I don't think that India has a reason to get away from plebiscite. And number two, when you yourself claim that out of six regions, almost people of five regions are with India, then the best and the civilized way is to hold a plebiscite. And I think that will be end of the story. It will be a befitting reply to Gilani Saab, to Pakistan and everybody else. So if India is not ready to hold a plebiscite, I'm sorry to say, then you are only diverting attention by raising Balochistan. Then someone has rightly said that if you have problem in Balochistan, you have problem in Nagaland, you have problem in Arunachal Pradesh, in Punjab, everywhere in India. So where, which part of the world is there where there is not a problem? Problem is in America also. So we are well wishers.
I haven't heard of any problems in Arunachal Pradesh or Punjab right.
Parveen Swamy is in your discussion this time. If he will recall, in 2010 he visited my constituency when nobody couldn't dare to come out of the drawing room, and then he wrote an article in Hindu that Langate, my constituency where I am from, is an island of peace. Because Kashmiris need peace. We definitely need peace, but peace without justice is impossible, and all roads, only road to justice leads to resolution of Jammu and Kashmir dispute, sir.
All right, Muzaffar Beg Saab, you heard what Shujaat Bukhari said, and at the end of the day, the basic broad theme, whatever we may say about Balochistan or here or what's happening in POK or Gilgit-Baltistan, internally in the valley, we need to find answers, we need to find some solution, we need to find a path forward. We can't have a resurgence of violence that takes place every 3 to 4 to 5 years. So I'm sure at all these meetings that are taking place, discussions are happening. What is the advice that you're giving? What needs to be done?
I respectfully agree with Shujaat Saab. I also admire the courage and passion of Rashid Saab. You know, I have special place for him in my heart. However, when we talk about plebiscite, I would like to respectfully point out a few facts. First is that resolution was under Chapter 6 of the Charter of the United Nations. That resolution under that chapter is only recommendatory and it is not binding. A resolution is binding on nations only if it is under Chapter 7. That's one. Number two, the conditions for the holding of the plebiscite required that Pakistan withdraw its forces from the area occupied during the tribal raid backed by Pakistan. I am not criticizing and sitting in judgment why Pakistan did not do it, but Pakistan did not do it. More importantly, when Pakistan allowed the territory of Kashmir, Gilgit, to be used for the flight of UT to conduct espionage over Russia, Russia became a great enemy of the UN, resolution, and therefore that question. Now, ideally, the best thing would have been the holding of a plebiscite in 1948. That did not happen. Now we have a constitution. Rashid Saab said that we take an oath, 187 people under the Constitution of India. That is not correct. We take an oath under the Constitution of Jammu and Kashmir. Section 5 of that section, read with Section 148, exclude the possibility or the legality of plebiscite. So we have a problem here. Theoretically, let us say that Government of India agrees to plebiscite.
The but first I mean, it's thing not going to happen, Sam. This is like really a hypothetical construct. Why on earth are you going to have a plebiscite?
Hypothetical. The problem will be that you will have to scrap the constitution of Jammu and Kashmir. Only then that can happen.
How will you fulfill your dream of joining POK with this part of Kashmir? How can you do it? No, they have been also saying. And one important thing, when you say that Pakistan has not implemented the conditions which was supposed to fulfill, we all Kashmiris will request Pakistan to fulfill those conditions. Let them withdraw from that place and hold a plebiscite and go. If it is not mandatory on the Government of India, let Government of India think about it and agree to the UN resolutions, and we will ask Government of Pakistan to withdraw from that area.
The probability of this happening, by the way, is zero. The probability of this happening in 2016 is zero. If it didn't happen in 1948, didn't happen in 50, 60, 70, 80, when India was genuinely much weaker, the probability of happening now is zero. And I think it's first, when we are talking about solutions, I think the first thing to do is to have a realistic solution.
Vikramji, with due respect, that is what I am telling you. Then how can Narendra Modi get that part of Kashmir to this side? Give me the formula. Give me the road map.
Okay.
We are dying. Let's die.
Right.
But how can
you
get Muzaffarabad?
I mean, I think your point is well taken. Rashid Saab, I think your point is well taken. There is no clear path for how you're going to get Gilgit Baltistan or POK and integrate that into India. There is no clear path. I know there's a UN, there's a resolution of parliament, but I can't think of a clear path to that either. So you have a valid point in that. But that's not necessarily the solution immediately to what needs to happen in the valley. So can I get all of you now in Delhi to
Vikram, first of all, I think Mr. Muzaffar Beg put it very, very eloquently. The fundamental issue is that the engineer Rashid is saying is facetious, because they took an oath under the JNK constitution. So asking for a plebiscite just doesn't make sense. It's just a red herring.
First of all, it's a red herring.
I think what's critically important is it should not be left to dialogue. The past 2 years, I've repeatedly said, and I also want to bring it to Mr. Rao's attention, is the BJP is putting the own PDP government in trouble. As early as July, they went and said in the assembly that India should bomb across the border. Now, the Jammu and Kashmir government doesn't do it. The government of India does. General Huda, who is the lieutenant general who is in charge, the general officer commanding, said we need to speak to all. So the question is...
But Rajnath Singh said he'll speak to all on the basis of Kashmiri.
Yes, but Vikram,
Let me complete.
No, let me complete. But Vikram, if you had said this...
Depends on whom you are...
The question is, who is the separatist?
No, Vikram, one second.
Is Mirwais Farooq a separatist? Is Syed Ali Shah Gilani a separatist? Is Yasin Malik a separatist? They're not. In the past, all these gentlemen have had Indian passports and travel identity cards.
I mean, Vikram, the question is, if you accept, I know what you're saying. I think at this point, let's not label people.
I think that's the point that I'm trying to... Let's not label people.
Okay. Can I just...
I need to complete on one point. I'm trying to say that 1 month back, if you had said speak to Yasin Malik or others, you'd have been labeled anti-national. Here, the home minister says, Modi ji says. So the problem is this kind of...
It's a serious issue. So what we're saying is
the government of India, instead of, you know, doing these crazy stuff, repeatedly jumping, hugging somebody in Lahore, coming back and all, should be more stable. Should whatever policies they do should be based on reason.
Okay. But you agree with the policy
If their general of...
If
I had said talk to separatists last 1 month back, you would have pulled out the Tiranga and said anti-national.
Okay.
That is the problem.
No, the real problem is we have cynical politics being played by even national parties. My only counter to the Congress is Modi, you have Chidambaram, who wants to fish in troubled waters. He's not a small man. He was a former home minister of the country.
Vikram,
at a time like this, he wants to form a government.
When Burhanwani's killing happened, Modi ji was tweeting drum beating in Mozambique. Parikar was selling bulbs in Goa. Who is cynical?
Please drone my voice.
Parikar was selling bulbs in Mozambique. Palikar was giving bulbs in Goa.
It's not fair.
And Modi ji was giving bulbs in Goa. You're telling me I'm saying
this is the wrong channel. Mr. Kumar, Mr. Rao, can I just come back, please, to Kashmir?
I think it's embarrassing.
Praveen Swami. Yes, they put Pakistan on the defensive. And therefore, I think the Prime Minister, you know, there's a reason why he did what he did. But the immediate question is, how are you going to defuse the situation inside the valley? Because we can't carry on in the way that we have been for such a long period of time.
The fact that we're having this kind of conversation, and the fact that we're having this endless discussion about, you know, 1947 and the UN resolutions, I think tells us something quite depressing about how serious we actually are, given that hundreds of young people, including Indian Security Force personnel, are injured or dead, and that entire half of a state has been under curfew for more than 50 days. The reality is that every district of the Kashmir Valley is completely dysfunctional today. There is no government of India or the state government outside the district headquarters. The police force, because of appalling management by the state government, has for all practical purposes ceased to function, except for the purpose of shooting at mobs. And there is no governance whatsoever. Ministers are unable to move outside Srinagar. And if you pick up local newspapers on any given day in Urdu, you will see a long list of terrified National Conference and PDP workers resigning from their local political parties because they're scared of being attacked in their homes. This is the reality. And the first building block of starting any kind of dialogue process is restoring some kind of normal political life. And the foundation for that has to be the restoration of some kind of order. That's the job of the state government and the central government. And when you say, you know, we have opened the door to talks, talking isn't going to do it. The possible interlocutors have all refused to talk, and they're not going to talk until there is some kind of foundation of stability, basic minimum stability. I see a complete, you know, this big word strategy he was trotted out half a dozen times earlier in this thing. I don't see a strategy. It would be very nice to see it on the ground, but I don't see it. 2 kilometers from Srinagar Airport, you see what is actually going on, which is gangs of kids throwing stones at the government officer's mess in the DGP office, which are halfway down that road. There will be time for a larger political strategy to fold out. In 2001-2002, Prime Minister Vajpayee started out this thing of engaging with Pakistan on the one hand and with secessionists on the other. That strategy has collapsed. We need to go back to the drawing board.
So therefore, we need to go back to... I mean, Jyoti, would you agree with his rather gloomy assessment of the immediate situation? Because let's face it, a lot of the other stuff that we are talking about is fine for the future. And we'll come back to it and what the big... The immediate situation, and in a sense, it's been allowed to build up the immediate situation. We've had a rise of Wahhabi influence in large parts of Kashmir. It's been spoken about. Nothing quite was done about it. And now, as the thing has completely escalated out of control, it's not very clear as to whether people know what to do. Now, there is one theory that sooner or later everyone will get tired.
This whole argument that people will get tired is the most cynical argument that any government can practice. And I think Praveen's assessment of it being gloomy, I think it's much, much worse than any journalist who goes there for a few days. And Shujat and all the people that you know also will tell you that. I think what's happening is that you have to have, therefore, a two-pronged approach. And when we say talk to everybody, including separatists, after all, unless you reach out to Yasin Malik, Saeed Ali Shah Gilani, Mirwais, Umar Farooq, it may...
Why would they talk right now?
Exactly. The point is, but unless you reach out to them, you're not going to be able to reach out to the stone pelters because they are not going to talk to you. They're busy throwing stones at you. And by the way, I think it is a fact that there are militants from Pakistan, Pakistani-sponsored militants who had infiltrated into the valley before the Burhan Wani incident.
And it's happening even now. If you see where the stone pelting incidents
absolutely.
Are happening, you can marry that to where militants are moving.
Absolutely. And
there
these
are militants,
militants
who are attacking security absolutely. Forces from those from stone pelting
and
crowds.
And these guys are mixing in the crowds and they are basically telling these kids to sharpen their stones. They're using marble chips now to attack security forces. So how do you restore that normalcy? The only way to do it, I think, is to say, yes, we will have... Put down your stones, put down all your weapons on both sides. And this pellet gun thing, Rajnath Singh says 4 days. Why can't it stop tomorrow? You have to stop it immediately.
It's not entirely that easy to put down the pellet guns
absolutely.
If you don't have an alternative.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise then, in many of those same places in South Kashmir, go to Pulwama, go to Thral, go to some of these places and you say, don't shoot at anybody with a pellet gun. if the crowd comes again and starts burning down a police station, they will fire with real bullets.
Vikram, there's no question. That's our security forces. Our security forces, I'm sure, have alternatives. I mean, listen, the government of India, the government of India, which is in coalition with the PDP government, they have to constantly talk about reaching out. You cannot say one day Kashmiriyat, Insaniyat, Jamhuriyat, and then the next day you say something else. You have to constantly use the organs of the state to say we have to talk. Simultaneously open talks with Pakistan.
Okay.
There's
can
no
I get
alternative
you to say
that.
We are actually running out of time, so I'm going to start getting out some final thoughts to try and wrap this up. So yeah, what should be done short term, immediately, what do you think should be done, and then long term?
I think we are skirting the issues. We say we must reach out to these people. What do they want? I'm not very clear in my mind what they want. They say they want Azadi. What does Azadi mean? Does Azadi mean separation, independence? That's not possible. If the idea is to go back to pre-1953 autonomy situation and that will satisfy them, take it from me, it will not satisfy them. They will take that and then start asking for independence. That will be the building block for making further demands. Because there are various factors that are at play. You mentioned one, the radicalization of the society, and of course the Pakistani factor, which will continue to foment a disturbance inside Kashmir. And the fact is that since the valley is predominantly Muslim and they have done this ethnic cleansing, it is very difficult to control them. Very, very difficult. And in a democratic state, if you use a lot of law and order means to suppress violent protests, there will be a public reaction. NGOs will get into play. Human rights violations, accusations will be made.
What should be done right now?
It's very difficult. That's why the government is at a loss what to do. And I don't think there is any clear strategy, because we've had recurrent problems in 2002, 2008, 2010.
If I may quickly come in.
1989, we've had these problems. It is not going to go away.
If I may very quickly come in.
I
think it's...
For the past 2 years?
No, wait a second.
Just one second. 2014 to 2016, why did it go so bad?
But
it was
wait a
peaceful for 6 years. No, it was peaceful for 6 years, my friend. Again, don't
make political.
Don't mislead and don't
match your. Ajoy, that doesn't help right now. Ajoy, okay, whatever reason is deteriorated, do you have a solution?
The question is, what Mr. Muzaffar Beg said is a very valid point. Cut the umbilical cord of the Hurriyat to Pakistan, so you make sure that the Hurriyat is ready to speak to you. You need to speak to some local thing. Praveen says, fix the law and order. And it's right. There are 4 districts where they're not policemen. The state has failed. The BJP will continuously fool this country and say nothing's happening. There's no district where there's 4 districts.
There is
one sec, let me complete.
Happening.
4 districts without policemen. Speak to everybody. Fix the law and order. Stop the pellet guns. You have an alternative.
Vikram,
use capsicum.
I'm coming to you next.
Yeah, he'll come to you. Chill. The other issue is, so the 4 points. Negate Hurriyat. Fix the law and order.
I mean, say fix the law and order. How do you fix the law and order?
Let me come to that. Look, I'm not saying that I've been an extremely successful cop, but let me give a police perspective. You'll need to get the police adequately on the ground, start reaching out to people, start various sections, talking to them. And it's a long process. It's not going to get solved overnight. But the problem comes is BJP continuously addressing...
You can go on blaming the BJP. You still haven't given a solution.
Vikram, I'm giving you a solution.
Why don't you give a solution?
I'm telling you.
There are mobs there throwing stones. How do you deal with it?
Vikram, you're...
How do you talk to them?
You're behaving like another anchor I seem to know here. And let me complete my sentence. What I'm trying to say... BJP has to stop playing politics with the
BJP
national...
BJP is horrible. What's your solution? You have no solution.
Gentlemen,
there's a serious crisis on. I'm trying to find a practical solution. What do you think needs to be done right now?
Prime Minister has had a meeting with all leaders from all parties. He's taken suggestions from everyone. Home Minister has made a visit. It's a multi-pronged strategy. It's not simply, there are security forces at the ground. Most of them have taken a big hit. More than 4,000 security forces have been injured in these operations. So certainly the attempt is to give a healing touch. Whatever their grievances are, we want to redress them. But it's the poor people, the boys from the poor families who are being used in these pelting activities.
The separatists are not there.
That's only part of the answer.
It's an exploitation.
These are slogans, and politicians know these are slogans. Prime Minister Manmohan Singh met with every one of the separatist leaders. You are now advocating the BJP meet. Prior to the 2010 violence, he met with them, he held covert and direct talks with them. They all broke down before the 2010 talks because they never came back with any proposals, which goes directly to the question Mr. Sibal asked, which is that they have never had any proposals for coming to the table short of secession from India, which they know India can't give them.
I'm not sure where the talks
But wait a minute.
As for this business of the police not being there, I mean, you can't say that there's no police and that they are shooting people in the guts with pellet guns. That doesn't make any sense. The problem really is that there is no leadership. Half the superintendents of police who were dealing with this problem have been kicked out of their jobs because of the so-called healing touch. The superintendent of police who killed Burhan Wani was removed for having shot a Hizbul Mujahideen commander because he'd done a good job, possibly.
The whole country's been trying to get for a long period of time.
There's complete chaos. The inspector generals don't know whether they're in their job this week or out the next week. Somebody needs to sort this mess out.
I'm afraid we are completely out of time, so I just want to come back to our guest from Kashmir. Your suggestion, Shujat, on trying to bring the immediate crisis into some sort of control?
I'm sorry for Kashmir. There is no time in this debate. But anyway, I'll take a few seconds to tell you. I think first and foremost thing is that as long as Government of India, as also the parties like Congress, which has been the mother of all ills in Jammu and Kashmir, continue to remain in denial mode as far as the ground reality in Kashmir is concerned, I don't think we can reach out to any solution and we can find an immediate solution to the current crisis. I can tell you with some sense of authority at my command that the youth who are on ground, who are pelting stones or joining the processions, have actually romanticized with what they are doing on the ground. And they say, I don't know what that means, but they say that this is now or never. How are you going to deal with that? I don't know. It's a challenging task. As Praveen said, that the first and foremost priority has to restore the order, and then will come the talk and all that. I think it's very important for all of us to understand that you will have to show some kind of remorse and empathy towards what is happening in Kashmir. I am very sad to hear from a person like a former foreign secretary. I'm sorry for that. So he's accusing us of ethnic cleansing, but he does not talk about the 70 boys, youth who have been killed in last 1.5 months here. So I think 80,000 people have been killed in Kashmir. I mean, I think the best thing at this stage would be that Government of India, as also the state government, rather than parroting the theories of 5% and 95% and all that, which is not on the ground, should apologize to the people of Jammu and Kashmir, especially the Kashmir Valley, for the killing of 70 people. And I think that could send some sense on the ground that someone is hearing, someone is concerned about Kashmir. Then I think the political course can be chalked out accordingly.
All right. Engineer Rashid.
Parveen Swamy rightly said that if people of Kashmir want Azadi and India is not able to give it, is not in a position to give it, let Government of India offer something concrete and maybe Kashmiris will discuss. If Government of India is getting us tired by saying that come and talk, but nothing comes of this talk, this word talk has become a nuisance in Kashmir. Now let Sonia ji and Modi ji get together and offer something to Kashmiris, and I think everybody will discuss it in their party headquarters, in their drawing rooms and in their meetings. If you offer us nothing but only just yes, come and talk and do nothing, I think the people just get tired. Number two, our Chief Minister, Madam Mahbooba ji, along with Rajnath Singh ji, she confessed that people were subjected to forced labor in Jammu and Kashmir. If Government of India tomorrow or Madam announces it that we will investigate all the cases of forced labor, especially in my constituency and other places, where at least 400 men were taken to forced labor per day and they practiced losses for 13 long years. So if those things are done, let you bring some confidence back to Kashmiris. Okay. I think that may help. Otherwise, if we just go for talking, we forget.
No, don't. So come and have something specific and then to talk. Okay, fine. Thank you both so much for joining us. And Shujat, my apologies for not being able to give more time. We had lots and lots of experts today. Muzaffar Beg, I'm going to end the show with you. Final thoughts from you.
Immediately, we must stop the pellet gun. We should reach the families of the injured and the dead. That's the immediate thing we can do. What I'm going to suggest may be unpopular, but we have to accept that the territory with Pakistan we can't get back. And Pakistan must give up its claim to the territory which is lawfully with India. So the de facto has to be converted into de jure. Finally, this can happen only if the SAARC vision 2020, which is so belated, is visualized, which means the seven countries, SAARC countries, must duplicate the experiment of the European countries who were war each other, but had they have come together, the SAARC seven countries must come together in that larger context, larger ocean of understanding, this issue will be resolved forever.
That last one is a rather ambitious thing to talk about, all SAARC countries coming together. But look, we have to try and find some sort of a solution, and I think immediately simple answers may have to be found, or what can be done tomorrow, day after, one step at a time. At least the immediate crisis has to be diffused. And then we must remember that if and when this immediate crisis is diffused, we shouldn't just say, okay, the problems are over now. We have to try and find a long-lasting solution to some of the issues out there. So, new strategy out there, be tough with Pakistan, try and extend the healing touch internally in Jammu and Kashmir. Let's see what sort of dividends that's going to be paid. We're going to continue to track this, of course, right here on this show as well. We'll be having further discussions on this, no doubt, in the weeks and months to come. You're watching The Big Fight. Thanks for watching. Bye for now.